Stranger Than Christian is sponsored by The Wash Vintage, clothing and accessories at unbelievable prices, rare, unique, and fashionable merchandise with new stock added each and every week. Visit thewashvintage.com, use the promo code STRANGER, and receive 10% off your first order. That's promo code STRANGER for 10% off your first order at thewashvintage.com. The Wash, vintage for the masses. Rest in peace, MF Doom, Alex Trebek, and Tommy Lasorda. From British Columbia, Canada, this is Stranger Than Christian. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are in the world. Welcome to another episode of Stranger Than Christian. My name is Christian Carrion. I know a few weeks ago I had a lot to say about the passing of Alex Trebek, and I promise I won't hit that as hard this time, but this happens to be the occasion of his final episode as host of Jeopardy. And I watched it, and it did to me just what I thought it would do to me, and just what I know the producers and everyone in charge of Jeopardy knew it would do to me and the millions of other people all over the country, all over the world, really, who enjoyed him and enjoyed his show. So it was a fitting send-off to a legend. So a quick bit of business before we get into today's episode. I'm talking to Nikki. Nikki lives in Canada, and she moved to Canada in 2016 after a certain cataclysmic political event unfurled in America in November of that year. And so I was interested to hear her viewpoint on a lot of things going on in the world. We actually recorded the episode on Wednesday, January 6th, 2021. So if you can think back and remember what was going on in our country, in the capital of our country around that time, that gave the beginning of the conversation a definite flavor, and it was really fresh in both of our minds. I personally don't have anything new to say about the events that unfolded in this country that has not been said more eloquently, more intelligently, or more incisively than has been said by many other people who are more than likely more qualified to talk about it than I am. It made me upset. The images of this what amounted to a terrorist attack on our Capitol have stuck with me, and personally, it's inspired me to hope and know that we can do better. I hope that makes sense. There's nowhere to go from here but up, in my mind. I don't have a very cynical view on the country and politics and things. I have hope that we can move on from this as a country, as a people. So, oh, yeah, I had a quick bit of business. Sorry, I got sidetracked. So I'm on Patreon, patreon.com/StrangerThanChristian. Now, when I first started doing the podcast, I really enjoyed the fact that the conversations had no real specified length. Some episodes were 45 minutes, some episodes were an hour 10, some episodes were an hour 30, some could go on even longer than that. There was no real termination point for the interactions that I had with these people that I was meeting. And when I got picked up on Radio Free Brooklyn in September of last year, which is going great, by the way, thank you to everybody listening on radiofreebrooklyn.org right now, I had to begin fitting the show into a 59-minute window, meaning that some elements of our conversation had to come out. Some of it had to be shortened. When I make the call while I'm recording the episode, I have to know that it should end around this time so that I can fit in the commercials and the intro and the music and everything I need to put in there. And I got this feeling that you would really enjoy hearing what those conversations sound like with no editing, with no processing, with no alterations, just complete, uncut, pure content. So what I'm doing for everybody who supports me on Patreon is I am providing what I'm calling Stranger Than Christian Unmastered. So these are the unedited, unabridged equivalents of every new episode that comes out on Saturday. You know, on Saturday, the episodes hit all the major streaming services. If you subscribe to me on Patreon, you will have the unedited version of each of those new episodes. Patreon.com/StrangerThanChristian, Stranger Than Christian Unmastered. I really think you'll enjoy it. Nikki from Canada is here with me, and we're going to talk about all kinds of things in just a minute. But first, here is a word of interest about a phenomenal program on the Apocalypse Podcast Network. You're listening to Stranger Than Christian on Radio Free Brooklyn. Stay right there.
Hey there, Robo fans and Dino fans. Do you like science fiction? Do you like movies about robots and dinosaurs? Do you like podcasts that explore sci-fi philosophy through a fun and positive lens? Then you are going to love Robots vs. Dinosaurs. Every week, your host, Louis G., invites a guest onto the show to talk about one of their favorite sci-fi movies. It's a RoboCast. It's a DinoCast. It's a battle for ultimate awesomeness in science fiction pop culture. Subscribe to Robots vs. Dinosaurs on Apple, Stitcher, or wherever you listen podcasts. New episodes every Friday. Follow us on Instagram at Robos V Dinos or Twitter at Versus Robots. That is at VS Robots.
Hey, Nikki.
Hey.
Hey, how's it going?
Pretty good. Hi, how are you?
You know, it's been a day.
Are you surviving?
I am safe and I'm surviving. Barely. You know, I'm in Pennsylvania, and Pennsylvania seems to be one of those states that's like, I didn't know we were that backwards and backwards and, yeah, and fucked up. You know what I mean?
Exactly, for sure.
I mean, I knew it. Like, a little bit. Like, I knew, it's almost like when you have, like, a drunk uncle, you know? And, like, you know what's there, but, you know, it's whatever. He's okay, you know, whatever. Yeah. But I did not realize just how fucking stupid all these people were.
Right.
I mean, you did. You did the smart thing. You moved. So, did you move to Canada when he won?
Yeah. I'm very lucky and that my partner is a Canadian citizen. And so when he was running, I looked at my partner and I said, you know, things have been getting worse here for a long time. If he wins, we won't be safe. We won't be safe. So I want to leave. And he said, yeah, okay, no problem. And he took office January 20th, and I arrived in Canada May 22nd.
Good for you. I feel like you did what so many people joked on Facebook that they were going to do and kind of said out of anger, like, I'm leaving the country. And to be able to do it is, it had to have felt great. I'm also curious as to the challenges you faced as a new American moving to Canada. Was there a lot of opposition? Were you welcomed in Canada?
My situation is a bit different than most people's. For one, I moved to a very small town. I didn't move to one of the big cities, and I didn't come with a job. So my partner works. I'm a stay-at-home mom. I'm an author. I'm a podcaster. I do all of that stuff. So it's not like I came and there was a community ready to welcome me or integrate me, you know? In addition to that, my partner's family is very small. It's his mother and his father are the only people that live on this island. Or not the only people who live on the island, but the only people who live on the island that we know or that he's related to or has any bond with. So I've had a bit of a harder time integrating because of that. You know, I've made a few friends, I've made a few connections, but for the most part, I've had a harder time integrating. I've had a harder time, finding that welcome community. They're here and the people I have met are wonderful, but it is harder to break in.
One of my fears in this current world that we live in, the coronavirus notwithstanding, but just the general pallor of the world as it is today. One of my biggest fears is going to another country and like not being welcome, because I would love to travel. And like right now, of course, that's not happening. But, you know, if it were to be possible, I'd love to go see another country. I don't think I went to Puerto Rico when I was like 2 years old, and I have a picture of me riding on a goat, and that's all I have. That's the only experience I have outside of America. But yeah. That's a huge concern of mine. It's like, am I going to get my throat slashed in a country that like doesn't like Americans? You know what I mean? So I always wonder if, as an American going to another country, if that person would have that sort of difficulty or that sort of resistance.
Mm-hmm. I don't think you're going to have it in most places, especially if you go into another country and you're respectful. I'm trying to travel more. Coming to Canada was my first journey outside of the United States. I had traveled across the U.S. and being a Black woman, that is not an easy thing to do. They don't, and especially in the middle of America, they don't want to see you there. And I think I've experienced more hostility within my own country than I have being in Canada.
Are there many Black people in Canada?
No.
That's what I thought.
Yeah, are there? No.
But there are some. I mean, yeah, there's at least one. Some. I'm talking to one right now. But
yes. No, I've met Black people in my community here. A couple, not many. But I don't know if you know, or I don't know what your race is. Do you want to tell me?
I'm 100% Puerto Rican, but you would 100%. Not be able to tell from listening to me or my ability to speak Spanish. I am the worst Puerto Rican that has ever existed in the history of Puerto Ricans.
Well, see, I hate that
I'm
judgment.
Worse than John Leguizamo.
I despise that judgment, because why are we judging you on your Puerto Ricanness based on your ability to speak Spanish? You
okay,
are still Puerto Rican.
Here we go. Let's talk about it. I have been judged for not speaking Spanish my entire life. Right. I know enough. I know, like, if I was in trouble or somebody who spoke Spanish was in trouble, I would know enough that I could communicate with them and get an ambulance there and at least communicate to an emergency worker what was wrong with that person. And to me, like, that, knowing a language to that degree is probably the most important. Like, if somebody was in trouble, I could help them.
Right.
But, you know, I was the first generation of my family born in America. Everybody else was born in Puerto Rico. And my family is from New York, moved to Connecticut. They never taught me Spanish because I think in their mind, I didn't really need it. Everybody around me was speaking English. Any job that I wanted, like my parents knew I wanted to be in broadcasting and be on the radio or on TV my entire life. That whole world that I idolized spoke English. So they didn't see any need to teach me Spanish. But as I got older, I noticed that people were calling me like a fake Puerto Rican because I didn't speak Spanish, or they were, you know, kind of like looking at me with side eye because I didn't speak Spanish. So to me, it was always like a part of my identity that was missing. And I never really felt 100% comfortable telling people my heritage, because there's always that question or that assumption like, oh, he must speak Spanish. And then I feel like I have to disappoint them and say, well, no, I don't. You know, I'm sorry.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I think that that's significant that you're able to say, you know, because of your parents' decisions, not a decision you made, because of the decisions of those who raised you, you have been criticized and told you're not enough of the race that you are. And in my opinion, that is an influence of the colonizers, of the people who have come and put our people down for centuries.
Right. And, you know, it's, how do I describe this part of it? It's, I feel like it's an unfair assumption to assume that I speak Spanish. I don't assume that every Asian I see speaks Chinese or Korean or Japanese. That's not an assumption of mine, that I don't know their experience, you know? So to like, to put that on me, like, make me feel guilty about it. Like, come on.
And are they any less of a, you know, whatever, because they don't. Am I any less of a Black person because I don't speak an African language?
Right. Exactly. There's no, that's a, what do they call it? Like a false comparison. There's a false sort of, it's false. It's a false comparison, yeah. Right?
Yeah. And not every white person speaks English, and it's foolish to assume they would. And to criticize somebody based on the way they look and what the fact that they don't meet your expectations is pretty cruel, don't you think?
I mean, it is. And I'll tell you what, they may not think you're a real Puerto Rican if you don't speak Spanish, but in the right circumstances, they will suddenly remember how Puerto Rican you are.
Oh, yeah.
And as a person of color, I know you know what I'm talking about.
I do.
Can I tell you an experience I had at work the other day?
Yes.
So I just moved over to the corporate side of this local supermarket in my area. So there's like six stores, and I work at the corporate office now. But for the past couple of weeks, I've been helping out with the online delivery. So people call in, not call in. They sign up online. They send their grocery list in. We pick it and bring it to their car curbside. It's ever since COVID blew up, it's been a huge thing. Mm-hmm. And so I was working with this girl who I won't say her name. She doesn't listen to this, but I won't say her name. And she was... I take my break in my car because I can't stand break room chatter. I just like to listen to music and just be away from the retail space for half an hour, you know. So I was in my car. I came out, went back into our little area. We have our own separate door on the side. She was bringing in a big shopping cart. And... you know, I've been working with her for 4 months, but this time, for some reason, it took her by surprise that I was behind. So I went to grab the door to help her get the card, and she turned around, and she screamed bloody murder twice. Oh my God. She went, and twice? It's me, twice, once without looking, and then once looking at me.
Okay, the second time makes it worse.
That's what I'm saying. And, you know, at first, I felt strange about it, because in my head, I said, you know, that felt... kind of racist. I gotta tell you, I don't know that if I looked like any of the other people in that store, if she would have had that reaction to me. Because right. That door in particular is used by so many people. They walk in and out of the building all the time. And it's really, really unsafe. And I've said something to them about it, but that's a whole different story. They use that door in and out, and nobody bats an eye. Why was my presence there suddenly so shocking and so surprising? And it made me feel really strange. And I read it by my wife. I was like, listen, this is what happened. Am I looking at this the wrong way? And she said, no, that feels weird, you know?
Yeah, it doesn't. It's not weird. It's racist. It's racism. It that is what this is. And I think that a lot of people are just now waking up to it.
A lot of people are, but you know what? A lot of people are not. And a lot of people fail to see how the rules apply to one side and don't apply to the other side and vice versa. You know, you look at what's going on, you know, this... like I tell you right now, I saw everything on the news and I said, this show that I'm doing tonight is going to air this weekend. Like it has to. So I'm okay with saying everything that's happening in the news today. Mm. Imagine if these had been people of color. How many of them would be alive right now? They had a guy in like a fur hat, like standing on the Speaker of the House's desk.
Oh, yeah. I saw I'm sorry. I don't know if we're allowed to curse.
You say whatever fuck you want. It's fine.
Okay. I saw a fucking kid. He could not have been older than early 20s, probably about 21, sitting at the dais with his phone out, smirking. Like, you could just see it, this smug look on his face. And I'm like, this epitomizes what is wrong with this country today. And if that was a black man, he would be dead.
Oh, be around. Oh, we'd be painting his names on all the walls. You know what I mean? We would have memorials to him. There was one kid had his arm around a cop and was like taking a selfie with him.
Yeah.
On what planet? Like on what planet?
No, and they think this is acceptable, that they can go in and disrupt the entire flow of Congress. Everything that was supposed to happen today had to get stopped and put on hold. Buildings were evacuated. People were called in. It's insane because they wanted to be mad about this. Okay, you can protest, you can get permits, you can do what you got to do, but you don't need to storm a building. And then they act like fools. They get in people's faces. They threaten the people who are there. That's not safe, but they walk away fine.
Right. Oh, I have yet, other than the one girl who got shot for trying to jump through the door to the Senate chamber. She got shot. She learned her lesson. And I don't know where she is right now or how she is, but...
I didn't know it was a girl even.
It didn't look good. And I made the mistake of watching the video because sometimes my curiosity gets the best of me. Look good. But with the exception of that, I don't know what other consequence I've seen so far. You know, you rewind to March, to April, to May, when we had all the Black Lives Matter protests. How many people were tear gassed and how many people were shot and how many people were beat up for communicating their grief. You know what I mean? It wasn't, you know, it wasn't a lot of violent protests. There were some, of course, but very small minority of them, I think, were.
At a peaceful protest in my town, the town I came from, and this is part of the reason I know leaving was a good decision. At a peaceful protest in my town, they were walking down the street. They blocked one lane of a three-lane road. The man, this black man, was walking toward the back of the group. A man with swastikas tattooed on his arm mowed down the black man, stopped the car. The police came, gave the man cigarettes, and sent him on his way. They have video of this white man mowing down the black man. And now the white man is living in Mexico.
Of course he is.
Never held accountable for his crimes. And this black man died.
He died. Holy
shit. He died.
Shit.
He died in, and this is in my town. There was a girl I used to babysit who was at the protest. And I was watching her her Twitter as all of this was happening. And she's updating and look at the cops smoking with this man who just mowed him down. He's on his way to the hospital right now. We don't know if he's going to make it. And the cops are over here laughing and smoking with the suspect and refusing to arrest him.
Incredible.
Yeah.
That's incredible. Yeah. What state was that again?
California.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah, there are some very backwards places in California. And yeah, it's sad. It's pathetic. And I came from there. I knew when I lived in a portion of the town where I went into a Rite Aid, which is a store there, and I went to pay. And this was long before the pandemic. And I gave her cash and she refused to touch my money. And the people behind me in line were laughing at me and they were just, you know, they were thinking it was so funny that she wouldn't touch my money. And she was just like, leave it on the counter.
Good Lord.
Yeah.
But you know what? You ask so many people. You could ask, I feel like you could ask any person of color in America and they have had an experience like that, an experience that fits that category.
See, what's weird is they not everyone has, or what's more shocking is that they've had it, but they didn't realize what it was. They couldn't call it what it was. One of my dear friends and the woman I'm currently attempting to draft a book with about privilege and bias. And it's a handbook that we're hoping will help people address these issues in a non-judgmental and safe way. She said to me before I moved, I've always felt white. I never thought I was Mexican. And, you know, she is a Latina and she has brown skin. And I remember looking at her and saying, but I've seen it. I've watched it happen to you.
Right.
You know? And so I said, it's happening. You're just not noticing. And in the last year, there have been more instances of her coming to me and just being like, you will not believe what happened. How did I not see this before? You know, it's just more and more and more as she's waking up.
Without spoiling any of the contents of what you're drafting, how do people address issues like this in a non-judgmental and sensitive and empathetic way?
First off, with honesty, we can't begin to address these issues if we can't be honest with ourselves and those around us. I just finished a book, well, not just, it was last month, finished How to Be an Anti-Racist. And one of the things he keeps talking about is, first, we have to acknowledge that we all are racist sometimes, and we can all be anti-racist sometimes, but we have to make the decision. And I think that that's the first thing we have to realize. None of us are perfect. We all do stupid shit. Let's own it. Let's own it right now.
Yeah.
We all have bad ideas, bad biases. We all have these things that have been pushed into our brain by society and by the patriarchy and by the colonizers. And if we stop and we say, why do I believe this? And we really look at why we believe what we believe, it's going to shake us, because we're going to start waking up and we're going to start saying, you know, a prime example, when I realized today, is laziness is a concept that has been pushed on us by the colonizers. So consider that hunter-gatherer civilizations had significantly more leisure time than farming and agricultural-based civilizations. So right. As civilizations started to shift, they needed more workers to work the fields. And they started telling people, oh, you want to eat this food? Well, you need to come over here and work for me, and then I'll pay you this pittance, and we'll have this exchange, you know, going. No, don't hunt anymore. Come over here and work my field. And it was that attitude, and where the colonizers have come over to the mainland here, or to the New World, or however you want to refer to it. They came to the U.S. They came, they went to Africa. They went to all of these places, these hunter-gatherer societies still. And they said, oh, no, you're not going to live like that anymore. And if you don't work as hard as I want you to work, then you are lazy. And lazy is bad.
Right. And that's it right there. Lazy is bad is like at the core of so much in our society. Right. Definitely.
That's just one example. So you take this idea of laziness and you challenge it and you say, why do I believe that? Where did this idea of laziness start? And what can we do about it now? And when you start addressing your beliefs like that, they change. They just naturally start to change. You start realizing how stupid some of these things are, you know?
My view of laziness has changed considerably over the past year, due mostly in part to the time that I've had to spend at home, a sort of mandatory quarantine for, and I was home for about 4 months. And I'll only mention this briefly because I talk about this, it seems like I talk about it with everybody I do an episode of the show with, because I think that I share that experience with a lot of people that I talk to. But it was a golden age for the relationship between my wife and I, because we got to slow down. We got to appreciate what we had. We got to stop spending money. We got to learn how to save a little bit and learn to appreciate the things we had and to, you know, stop lusting after the things that we don't have. And it just changed our mentality. It was such a heel turn for us. Do you know what I mean? And so
100%.
Yeah, laziness to me like does not mean the same thing as it did in January of 2020, and I think that that's for the better.
Well, I can tell you, my family, I was talking to my grandmother the other day about this. My partner has been home since August 18th. He got a new job. It was actually a promotion that allowed him to work from home. So, he started staying home from August 18th. In that time, from then to today, our marriage has improved. Our friendship has improved.
Yes.
I understand him and his signals more and in a new and interesting way. And he's learning how to communicate more clearly. Now, also,
let's explore that for a second. What do you mean by that? Like, give me an example of that. I really find that interesting. As somebody who's trying to communicate better in his marriage, I find things like that really, really interesting.
My partner doesn't like to talk about his emotions. He doesn't like to talk about his feelings. He doesn't want to talk about any of that stuff. In fact, if he doesn't see like significant value in whatever is being said, he just doesn't understand the purpose of the conversation. Whereas I'm sure you can see, I'm a bit more of a talker. I want to have the conversations. I want to have rambling, silly ones. I want to have serious ones. I want to talk about everything. Sorry, excuse me. So realizing that part of his communication style is that it has to have value. Part of, you know, what I realized, okay, well, I have to give him the value up front. You know, we're going to have this silly conversation because it makes me happy. And then he sees the value in that. It's not just, oh, I'm going to start this silly conversation. In addition to that, he's learned how to say, I'm mad and I'm allowed to be mad. Or, you know, I'm feeling this thing and I'm allowed to have this feeling. And then communicate about the feeling and the reasons around that. And I don't want to, you know, put too much on him because he's not here to talk about it himself.
Sure.
But yeah, that's more of what I'm seeing from his side of it. So I'm learning how to read his signals, that nonverbal communication, and even sometimes the verbal communication, to say it's not an insult if he doesn't want to sit here and have an hour-long conversation about why Mr. Potato Head is a certain thing, or whether it should be made of turnips. I don't know. You know?
Did you know when Mr. Potato Head first came out, you had to supply your own potato? You only got the body parts and stuff? How cool is that?
That is amusing. I thought it was funny.
Yeah, I thought it was really funny.
Yeah.
I was like, I want to be the guy at like Hasbro who's like, let's make a plastic potato. And then let's hollow out his butt. And that's where you put like the eyes and stuff.
Yeah, and they said, no. We'll just do the eyes and stuff, and they can do the rest yourself.
I used to love Mr. Potato Head. That was like a legit cool toy.
Yeah, for sure. I liked it when Mrs. Potato Head came out.
See, I never had. I would have had a Mrs. Potato Head. I was not a kid who was bothered by the gender of toys. If it was fun, it was fun. No, never. I've always liked creative type toys, and even when I was into video games, the way every kid was into Super Nintendo and stuff back in the day, I always loved puzzles. I always loved things that like challenge my brain a little bit more. So like when everybody's parents were worried about like Mortal Kombat and like blood and violence and shooting and stuff, you had literally nothing to worry about with me. That was like the polar opposite of what I was into.
Wow. Okay. Yeah, I just missed all of that. I didn't have that experience at all.
Yeah, some people didn't. And I had it on and off. You know, sometimes it seems like sometimes when the electric bill was due, my Super Nintendo was out of the house. And then when we were caught up, it was back in my room. And I never understood it then, but I understand it now.
Yeah. Like, we didn't have a Super Nintendo. I think we had one very early. No, we did have one very early on. But then the house burned down, so we didn't have one after that.
Oh, geez. How old were you when that happened?
Oh, I was young. Maybe seven?
Scary. Do you have a lot of memories of it?
Yeah, I have memories of the house being on fire. I have memories of walking through my room afterwards, you know, and trying to decide if anything's worth saving. I have some really freaky nightmares. My biological mother had white porcelain masks, and you know, all of them were very serious looking and very beautiful, and I remember walking into her room and they were on the floor. Some of them were broken, covered in soot. And I just have these nightmares of that white porcelain face looking at you covered in soot. Oh,
wow. That is a vision. That is a scary vision. Wow.
They were so pretty when she hung them on the wall, but the way their eyes were closed always freaked me out. And then seeing them like that. Oh, no, thank you.
My wife and I had a car accident back in the beginning of November, and neither one of us got hurt. She got like a bruise on her knee, but it was the worst car accident I had ever been in. Like the airbags came out. We were going straight, and a car was looking to make a left turn. It was raining. A car was looking to make a left turn, and I guess what she told me afterwards was that she didn't see how close we were to her. So she went to make her turn and hit us head on. We were going about 35 miles an hour. So the car was gone. Everything was smashed. And for about 3 weeks after that, the only memory I had of the accident that stuck with me was the sound. It had sounded like a big paper bag popping.
Oh.
And just that pop. And it would wake me up like four times a night for about a month. And, you know, I was working at the supermarket. And again, I was doing the online thing. So I had a cart and I was walking around getting stuff. And anytime anybody came around a corner, you know how people, especially around the holiday season, are just looking to shop and get the hell out of the store. So everybody's kind of in a rush. 40 close calls a day. And every time a cart came that close to my cart, pah, and I would hear it.
Oh my goodness.
It was horrifying for a little while. And it's so funny how just those little elements of traumatic experiences like that stay with you.
Oh yeah. I'm living with PTSD, and the littlest thing can trigger you. The smallest thing.
Can you explain to me what PTSD is? And maybe not to me, but maybe to somebody listening, because I feel like that is a term that gets thrown around a lot more in the past 5 years than it has been before that. What is PTSD?
Okay. Well, I'm diagnosed by a psychiatrist with post-traumatic stress disorder. Basically, something traumatic happened to me. It was actually a series of traumatic things throughout my life. And as a result, I have significant issues that result. So I have triggers that can send me into a flashback or a dissociative state. Something very minor can cause me to absolutely freak out. Sorry, it's not always easy to talk about.
Oh, if that's okay. Listen, no, talk okay. about it to whatever degree you want. And if you don't want to talk about it, that's fine too.
It's okay. It's just when I'm trying to think about these things, some of them come up again. And I'm right. like, oh, wait, it's okay. And it's actually really surprising because one of the scariest traumatic events in my life was tied into being married to my ex-husband. And he died in November. And it was such a shock to just have that. And this is actually the first time I've talked about PTSD or any of that trauma since he died. So that's really a weird thing. And I'm trying to sort of separate the two. But that's what I mean. It's something so minor. Just thinking about the symptoms that I deal with can trigger the memories that I experience. And part of being an author, part of what makes me a good author, I think, is that I'm very visual. I can close my eyes and picture something and it's there for me. It's real for me. Everything is it's an experience and it doesn't actually have to be in front of me. I can smell a pie when I close my eyes and picture the pie. You know what I mean?
Sure.
So these flashbacks and these memories that hit me rock me to my core because it's that real every single time.
You're listening to Stranger Than Christian with me, Christian Carrion, on Radio Free Brooklyn. For more information or to apply to be a guest on the show, visit strangerthanchristian.com. New episodes air every Monday at 2 a.m. Eastern on radiofreebrooklyn.org and become available on all major streaming platforms the following Saturday. Subscribers on Patreon receive special benefits, including question submissions and unedited, ad-free versions of each new episode. Visit patreon.com/strangerthanchristian to help support this creative venture. Thank you.
I have a wonderful friend who hitchhikes across the country, the U.S., for fun. And I think he took his skateboard last time, but I think he just took it like, oh, this will be an extra way to transport that's not walking the entire way. Because hitchhiking is not, you're not getting a ride every time. You're spending a lot of time walking.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, he does it just for fun. He likes to meet the people. He likes to figure out what's going on in the world. He likes to see the different communities.
Right. I mean, that's the fun part of taking a trip across country. You want to see the country.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Have you ever traveled the country? I know you said you've only been to Puerto Rico, but other than that.
I have flown across the country. Not by land, which I'd love to do, but I've flown from New York to Los Angeles a couple of times.
Oh, wow.
But that's the longest trip I've ever taken, I would say.
Mm. I've never been in a plane.
I hadn't either. The first time... okay. The first time I took an airplane, other than when I was little and have no memory of it, because that doesn't matter to me. The first time I ever took a plane ride and remembered it was from New York to Los Angeles to be on The Price is Right.
Seriously?
That was the first time I ever took an airplane, and I took it by myself, and I wasn't nervous at all.
How old were you?
That was my 18th birthday.
Wow. Did you get to be on the show?
I did.
Did you win? Is it on the air? I don't know how
I
old
did.
You are.
I won. That was in 2007. I did win. I won a sofa and I lost a car, but I did win. It's on YouTube. I'll send you the link to it.
That would be so cool. Please do.
Yeah, I will. I'll send it to you. If you look at the pictures of me, like on Facebook and on the website and stuff, I'm unrecognizable. I am very much 18 years old, but yeah, that was me.
This is the so voice is still exciting. There. I'm excited to see you win on The Price is Right. This is going to be thrilling.
Oh, good. Oh, you're going to love it. Okay, good. I don't let me forget. I promise I will send that to you.
And all the time I lived there, I seriously lived 2 hours from LA for my entire life. I never went to any tapings of shows, nothing like that. I watched The Price is Right every day for years and never went to a taping, but I live 2 hours away.
Right. Oh, God, it was so much fun. It was much fun.
And here you are, 18th birthday. Up, I'm going.
That's what I wanted to do. Oh, that ever since, geez. I mean, I've been watching that kind of stuff since I was like a toddler with my mom, you know, but so I adore it. But ever since I got to be old enough to realize that, like, hey, once I turn 18, I can like do that. I told my parents for my 18th birthday, just get me the plane tickets. I know where to go. I know how to do it. Just give me the plane tickets and a little bit of money for food. I promise I will bring it back and then some.
Okay. So what do you think you did? I know I've seen like you have to really stand out for them to choose you. What do you think you did that made you stand out?
When they interview contestants for The Price is Right, so they talk to the whole audience. It's about 300 people in the audience, and they talk to them like five at a time. So there's one guy who talks to each person for like about 30 seconds, and they ask you two questions. They ask you where you're from and what do you do? And I found, and I've only done it once, but it worked for me. And I've been on five other game shows since then, and this has worked for me then too. I try to make a little more conversation than just answer the question. Mm-hmm. At least that was my strategy for that particular, you know, when you do other shows, it's a little more detailed and you have to like submit a video sometimes and you have to go audition and that kind of thing. But this is very like spur of the moment. You know, I just tried to make more conversation than the question asked for.
Yeah.
So when I was on The Price is Right, I was working at Quiznos part time.
Mm-hmm.
So I mentioned that, and I just kind of had a conversation for an extra few seconds about the line of work, what I liked about it, you know, and that got him asking another question of me, and it just showed that I had a little more to me than just, like, stand there, answer the question, walk over here. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And somehow I think also the fact that I was in line for 3.5 days, that probably helped a little bit too, but...
3.5 days?
Oh, yes. Yes,
oh my
yes,
gosh,
yes, yes,
why
yes.
were you in line for 3.5 days? What?
Because Bob Barker was retiring, and this was his last month. So typically the line is about 350 people long. Like, the last 50 people get a standby ticket. So if somebody has a bad tuna sandwich and needs to leave, you can hop in their spot if you have a standby ticket. The line for the show was about 3,000 people long. It stretched all through Los Angeles, and I was number one in line because the show was on Tuesday, May 15th, 2007 at 4:30. I got to CBS the previous Saturday at 11 o'clock in the morning, and I just sat down at the gate. I said, this is where I'm going to be. I had no chair. I had no food. I had no nothing. Somebody who lived in the apartment building next to the studio brought me down a chair. They saw that I was like waiting for something, and they said, you don't have a chair. Here, have a chair. So they got me a chair. I met this incredible family from Virginia that I'm still Facebook friends with. They gave me like a big box of like pastries and sausage and stuff from the hotel buffet where they were staying.
Everybody was so
incredibly nice. It was such an experience. And then I won a sofa, which was like icing on the cake.
Did you? Okay. I've always wondered how you receive your prizes.
Okay. So when you sign... After the show is over, you go in this back area and you sign all your paperwork. They tell you what you won and what the dollar value of it was. So if you have to claim it on your taxes, you can do that. I was living with my parents, so they took care of that at that point. And then they say, we will deliver your prize within 90 days of the air date. So tape date was May 15th, air date was May 23rd. So there wasn't much of a gap. But right. anytime in those 90 days, you could get a knock on the door and have a couch at your door. So it was exactly 90 days. And I was just sitting, in the living room, and this massive truck pulled up. And it was this big corn-fed dude at the door. He said, "We have an order for a couch in this apartment." It's like, "Yeah, bring it on in. That's me."
Damn.
Yep. And so I, so they dropped off the couch, and I said, "Hey guys, want to know how I got this couch?" Because I don't think they knew that, like, yeah. I didn't buy it. So I played the clip of me winning it for them, like, on my computer that was, like, set up next to the door. And I specifically remember this guy said, "We've delivered to presidents and we've delivered to sports people. I've never delivered to anyone on the process, right?"
I bet you were their favorite celebrity.
Oh, I had to have been. Such a famous person I was.
Oh, that's amazing. Amazing.
Good time. It was good times.
I've got to ask, and we can move on after this if you want to, but you said you've been on 5 other game shows?
Yes. The Price is Right when I turned 18. Then a couple years later, when I started, my freshman year of college, I was on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire. And I did pretty well there. And a couple years after that, I was on a show called Hollywood Squares. MTV was doing their own version of Hollywood Squares. And actually, the money from that show, I used to take the girl who is now my wife on our first date. So that show paid for our first date, and we've been married for, it'll be 4 years this year. And then after that, I was on a show called The Chase on Game Show Network, and that was like a trivia type thing. And that was the first one I had ever been flown to California for. So I was living in Connecticut. I auditioned in New York. They wanted me on the show, so they flew me there, which was like so cool. They did like the awesome. Hotel and everything. Yeah. And then I did a show called Let's Ask America. And that was like a thing we had to like predict what, how people answer stuff. That was from home. That was really cool. I got to do that like from my laptop. And then I was on a show last year, called Match Game on ABC with Alec Baldwin.
How fun.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's been fun. I've been blessed by the game show fairy many, many times.
I love to watch game shows and guess, but I'm so bad at them. I'm bad at all of them.
Well, I am too. See, you haven't seen any of them. I've been on them. Yeah. Yeah, I haven't done the best on all of them.
Oh, I think it'd be really fun to be on them, but I don't know. I would love to be on... what's it called? Whammy? Press Your Luck.
Oh, Press Your Luck. That was like my favorite show. When I was really little, that was like my number one show. I used
For
to
sure.
love that show. I think got me. I love TV and I love game shows, but I think that particular show got me into TV because it was so shiny and so fun, and there was even like a cartoon in it. You know,
it was
everything. Life. Yes, it was everything. You're listening to Radio Free Brooklyn, independent, listener-supported radio. Radio Free Brooklyn's mission is to provide a free and open platform to our community and promote media literacy, education, and free expression. We rely primarily on donations from listeners like you. Every dollar helps us stay on the air. Support independent community media by pledging whatever you can. All contributions are tax deductible to the fullest extent of the law. Please support with a monthly pledge or one-time donation at radiofreebrooklyn.org/donate. If you'd like to listen to RFB when you're not in front of your computer, please consider downloading our free mobile app for iPhone and Android, available in the App Store for iPhone or the Google Play Store for Android. And please be sure to subscribe to our monthly newsletter for the latest news about new programming and upcoming RFB events. You can sign up at radiofreebrooklyn.org/newsletter.
I fucking love this country. Canada is an amazing place. It's one of the reasons I want to get involved so bad, you know? I want to get involved in the community and in the anti-racism organizations and the green and eco organizations, because the things that are wrong up here are fixable. And they're fixable in the U.S. too. It's just that you guys have a bigger block of people saying no.
Not anymore, we don't.
Hopefully not. Georgia did the right thing. I'm so proud of Georgia.
Yeah, they really did. And I have hope for that. Absolutely, round of applause for them.
Yes.
I have hope that that's going to do good things for us.
Yeah.
I am cautiously optimistic.
I honestly believe that we're not going to see a lot of forward motion right away.
Right.
But we will see some, and I think that it puts us on the path to do more good in the long run. You know, the U.S. is a good place, and it's filled with amazing people. We just need to push you in the right direction a little bit. And I think that once they realize how good they can have it, they're going to demand it, you know?
Do you remember the first time in your life you wrote something that made you think, holy shit, this is really good?
Yeah.
What was it? Tell me everything.
Okay. I need to tell you just a little bit about why I am an author. My foster mom, her name is Vicky or Victoria Ponte, was an author. And she never got published, sadly. She was amazing. And one of the things she did to help me sleep at night, I was not a good sleeper, is she would read to me. So I would fall asleep, and she would read to me from her books. A lot of those were adventure romance types. So I'm about 8 years old, and I'm writing in my journal, and I'm like, I'm going to write like Vicky writes. And I start describing this man. And my favorite line that I still remember is, he was built like a brick shit house. To this day, I do not know what a brick shit house is.
That's a phrase, though. I don't know what that means either, but that's a thing.
She used it in her books. I thought it sounded cool. So I put it in mine. I read it. I was like, this is awesome. I'm going to be an author when I grow up. I still want to be an author, but yeah.
I love it.
So that's incredible. That's it.
That was the first thing
I wrote.
Holy shit, this is really good.
This is good. I'm gonna be an author. Yeah.
I love it. It's such a good phrase.
Now that
I'm older, it's such a good phrase. It feels like a brick shit house.
It is. It's pretty silly. Yeah. And I still, like I said, don't know what it means.
Right. but also, like you said earlier, it paints a picture.
It does.
It paints a picture. A brick shit house. That's pretty well built.
Yeah, I think at that age, I thought it was like bricks made from shit. And I was like, I don't know why anyone would want to be made from this, but okay.
I mean, like shit bricks. Like Adobe kind of.
Yeah.
Remember when I said this was worth the $5 a month?
Yeah.
We're going to backtrack that just a little bit. Just a little bit. We're going to run that back a little.
Okay.
So I ask this of everybody who participates in this show, Nikki, because participation in this show is a choice, was a choice. I put out a form on Reddit. I said, if you want to fill this out, name, quick bit of info about yourself, nothing too detailed, whatever you want to tell me, and we'll have a conversation. What made you want to say yes to that experience? What made you follow that whole thing through to the point where you're right now talking with me?
I think part of it is that, you know, I have a lot of stuff, a lot of goals this year, a lot of things that I want to accomplish. And part of being able to accomplish those goals is getting the word out about them. So I need to tell people that I have a book. I need to tell people that I have podcasts. I need to tell people that I'm working on other projects and that they can find me on all of these other places. And if they follow me, then they'll know when these other things come out. Because being a creative in our current society means also marketing yourself and working it every single day. And when I had the opportunity, I read through your post and what you required, and I listened to a bit of your podcast, and I was like, yeah, if I have to market myself, I want to do it with someone kind of cool. So I figured I might as well try it with you.
Hey, well, I appreciate that.
Yeah.
thank you very much. Well, I got to tell you, first of all, I want to know about your book, and I want to know about your, I'm not wrapping this up yet until you tell me about your book and your podcast.
Okay. Well, I've actually got two podcasts. Let me tell you first about Happy Not Crappy. That one is appropriate for all ages, most episodes. I'm the co-host with Mickey Williams. He's a voiceover actor in Georgia. So he helped contribute to this wonderful thing going on yesterday and today. He's wonderful. He's funny, and we get on every week and we talk about the good news of the week. So we hit on odd, absurd, or uplifting news that most people miss because they're inundated with all of the bad, shitty stuff. So that's Happy Not Crappy, and that goes up every Sunday. Then I have a erotica podcast that is for adults only. And that is under the name Slut Stories by Anais Zynga. I use a pen name for that, so it's not associated with my author identity, and I can still write children's books.
Right.
Yeah.
And in case you want to know which is the family-friendly podcast, just look at the titles.
Yeah, do that. Do that. And that is having its second season starting February of this year. And then my book is Pateria the Immortal. It is a space fantasy about a 5,000-year-old immortal woman. She basically she got captured about 300 years ago, and her memory was wiped. And so she wakes up, and they're telling her, you know, we need you to come save the Earth. And she's like, wait, what? And it's her journey and how she, you know, makes her decisions. And it's silly and it's fun and it's action-packed. And it takes place in space. So that's always cool.
Awesome.
And and then my last book that I'm working on doesn't have a title yet. It's a creative nonfiction, and it's about pursuing our biases and privileges and determining where we sit and why we believe what we believe, so we can challenge our belief systems and make the world and society as a whole a better place.
We all need that, do we not?
Yes, we do.
Absolutely. That sounds fantastic. Nikki, this has been such a pleasure talking to you. This episode was built like a brick shit house.
Not of shit, I hope.
No, not of shit. No, we'll get into the logistics of it later, but no, this was so much fun.
I had a blast with you. Thank you for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Oh, it is my pleasure. Thank you for coming on. I'm really glad we're not strangers anymore. Good luck with your writing. Good luck with life in Canada. And thank you so much for talking to me. This was so great.
Yeah, don't forget to email me those links.
I'm gonna stop recording when we're done here, and I'm gonna send it to you right now.
Okay, awesome.
All right. Sounds good. Thank you so much, Nikki.
Thank you.
All right. Stay safe. Bye-bye. Stranger Than Christian is produced by me, Christian Carrion, for my studio in Lancaster City, Pennsylvania. Join me every Monday at 2 a.m. on RadioFreeBrooklyn.org for a brand new episode. And listen to my entire catalog of episodes on all major streaming services and at StrangerThanChristian.com. If you enjoy the show, support me on Patreon. You'll receive lots of perks and bonus content, including unedited, ad-free episodes of the show. Go to patreon.com/strangerthanchristian to give your support. Until next week, thank you so much for tuning in to Stranger Than Christian on Radio Free Brooklyn, part of the Apocalypse Podcast Network. I'm Christian Carrion. Good night.
Let's teach people something super quick.
Every year,
More people die from getting hit on the head with coconuts than they do from shark attacks.
Like dead?
It's not that many, because like only like one or two people, I think, die from shark attacks every year. The low teens for the coconuts.
Coconuts are hard.
Teach me something good.
Now on your local favorite podcast thing.
Yeah, all podcast things.
Thanks for listening to the Apocalypse Podcast Network. For more great podcasts, go to apocalypsepodcastnetwork.com.